just a little bit. That's too short.
Nice, Gary.
So that's when a wicketkeeper is constantly in your ear like Wade is here. Did it annoy you? Did you want to turn around and say, mate, seriously?
Yeah, occasionally there was a keeper that really get under your skin. It's, if there was a spinner bowling for a long time and you're that close.
Nice, Gary!
And the ball comes out of the middle of the bat. And there's all this cheering and
just like that one. Yes. I turn around and say, mate, what's nice about that? It's hit the middle of my bat.
But generally, they're known to be chirpers, aren't they, the keepers? Stands up, plays it well.
Nice, Gary!
It's a short ball. Rabbit moves back and falls scarcely past square leg. So this is cricket.
Victory to the Australians by 8 wickets.
He's done it! Playing round, he's got two! Beautifully caught!
He's done it.
Welcome to episode 5 of The Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnoo. That's right, we're into the second test, our fifth innings as fledgling young cricket podcasters, myself, Straubs, and of course my co-host Schnoo. How are you doing this week, my man?
Good, thanks, Straubs. Really loving the summer of cricket now. Cricket every night, Big Bash is here.
It's what it's all about, isn't it? The Big Bash, yeah. You turn around, there's cricket on. You get home, you've got a few hours of entertainment, the sun's still up, so it sort of feels like the days are a bit longer, there's cricket to look forward to every day. It's probably the best time of year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, without a doubt. Can the Christmas shopping and just watch the cricket.
I've been fantastic. I'm going to go slightly off topic straight away. I've been fantastic with my Christmas shopping this year. I have had stuff done for months. And then I go out and buy more stuff that I don't need for my niece, who's not even just a month old, and I'm still buying it.
That's understandable. Now, I'm actually impressed.
Yeah, you know what she has got? And as I said, she's a month old. She's got her very own Michael Clarke branded cricket set. Ready to go. I've bought that for her. It's got some little stumps and a little ball and a little bat. That's ready to go as soon as she's ready. I'm not going to pressure her into cricket, but the second she's able to hold a bat and grasp the idea of cricket, we're going to be at the back. We're going to have some throwdowns. Yep. It'll make me feel like Brett Lee. I'll be able to get some good bounce and some good intimidation. But we'll have another Elise Perry. I promise you that she'll be a Southern Star for sure.
Without a doubt, I trust you there, mate.
Right, let's move on. I think I'm getting some wind up looks from my mum. So let's jump straight into it. World record. By the Pakistanis in the fourth innings, world record run chase, still lost, but huge effort. And it got pretty uncomfortable there for a little while.
It certainly did. You could tell Steve Smith was visibly worried in the field. He admitted so in the press conference after the win, and it was not a good look for most of that fifth day. And the last couple of wickets, I wouldn't say were lucky, but certainly didn't look like they were part of the plan.
No, not at all. I mean, if we look back on it, you've got Australia bat first, 429. Got to be pretty happy to get to that point. Hundreds from Smith and Hanscombe. It was a big one for Peter Hanscombe. It was great to see him notch that maiden test century. Matty Renshaw was 71. Everything was looking pretty good. We snuck over the line to the point where, you know, Nathan Lyon and Jackson Bird were doing a bit of late hitting and putting on a bit of a show. I think 49 was the last wicket partnership.
Yep.
Roll Pakistan for 142. No real fight except for Ahmed, who got 59. Everything's looking sweet. Now, I get why Steve Smith didn't enforce the follow-on. Get the bowlers out of the field. And I'm not saying I agree with it. But get the bowlers out of the field, just put the game to bed, put it out of reach, and then come out and clean up Pakistan again when there's nothing to be gained and there's really no point apart from battling for a draw for Pakistan to be out there. The execution, however, diabolical. The runs were relatively quick. 5 for 202, Australia declared. 70-odd from Khawaja, 60 from Smith. Unbeaten 35 from Hanscom, which will chip into the average nicely. And they left Pakistan bundles of time. A slight rain delay obviously ate into that, but still plenty of time. And I think it was like 2.8 runs per over was the required rate from the start, which if you're going to bat for long enough to save a test in that time, in 2 days, you're going to score the runs. Was it the right decision?
It was the right decision. I think Steve Smith was wise in the fact that you cannot count on the Pakistan middle order, well, top and upper middle order to not perform two innings in a row. Mm-hmm. So I think if he had given them that end of third day pitch to bat on, it could have turned ugly if they didn't take quick wickets. Because you've got to remember that their two best batsmen did not score, you know, heavily at all. I think for the total for the game was 75 between Yunus Khan and Mizbah or Hutt. And obviously at their age, against the pink ball, you know, it's questionable. First game against, you know, proper quality test bowlers. You know, it's understandable that they failed, but you can't count on that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's perfectly fine for him to not enforce the follow on. And I also think the timing of, you know, of day night test matches kind of muddled that thinking as well, in regards to, you know, the perceived wisdom is that it's hard to start and it's hard to bat in that final session under lights. And so therefore it's, you know, it's all in the favour of the bowlers. Which proved true in the first Adelaide test against New Zealand. Didn't hold true particularly in the test against South Africa. And I think, you know, both batting sides did pretty well in that final night session across all 4 days in this test match. So
yeah.
I think in terms of strategy, they might have to rethink that in regards to when exactly, you know, you declare if you're trying to get quick wickets. I actually think it might be just that time before sunset when it's kind of getting, you know, the shadows
so
are
the
starting.
The twilight
to,
starts to come.
Yeah,
in.
The twilight. Yeah, I think the timing of the that dinner break might have to change if they want to actually introduce that element back to cricket.
Yeah, well, that seems to be when every time things were just starting to get a little dicey, it was off to that dinner break.
Hmm.
So yeah, I think you might have something there, and I think our for Australia anyway, our pink ball test experience at home has been Adelaide. And Adelaide alone.
Yeah.
And it's easy to sort of think, well, it's just going to transfer from ground to ground. But Adelaide and the Gabba are two different cricket grounds, and they have very different personalities almost as cricket grounds and pitches. So
and pitches, yeah.
I don't think it's a blanket, okay, this is the worst time, this is what you do at this time. I think there needs to be a little bit more individuality as to where you're playing the test and the conditions and the opposition. So you know, that's the sort of things that the more test cricket that's played in these conditions, the more we'll probably start to understand, and the conventions will change around that as well.
Yeah, of course. And the thing is, like, after that test match that lasted almost, 3 days against, almost 3 days against New Zealand last year, mm-hmm. Steve Smith publicly and privately complained to Cricket Australia as well as to the curator, saying, you guys left way too much grass on this. And so if you leave more grass on a pitch, in the twilight, it's going to pick up more moisture from the air.
Mm-hmm.
It'll keep the ball fresher and it'll swing around and do things off the seam.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so by getting less grass on the pitch this year in Adelaide, and no doubt that's influenced the curator's mind and, you know, what he's set up for Brisbane at the Gabba,
mm-hmm.
It's changed you know, the personality of pink ball day-night cricket, simply because it's not going to swing and see him around so much in that last session.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's hard to argue. The big concern for me, obviously, the big idea behind not enforcing the follow-on was to take the game away from Pakistan and give the bowlers a rest. A rest is the last thing the bowlers got. The guys got belted. I mean, Mitchell Stark, 38 overs, 4 for 119. Josh Hazlewood, 42 overs, none for 99. When was the last time Josh Hazlewood would have bowled 40-plus overs and not taken a wicket? Jackson Bird, 33 overs, 3 for 110. Nathan Lyon, I mean, your spinner only bowled 29 overs for 2 for 108, which in comparison to 42 and 38 from his strike opening bowlers is quite interesting. And 3 overs for none for 9 for Nick Maddison. But the guys copped a hell of a workout.
Yep. We certainly need a fifth bowler, whether that's Steve Smith to bowl 10 overs, you know, per innings, or I actually think, you know, if they don't pick any of the so-called bowling all-rounders, you know, Mitch Marsh, Faulkner, Enriquez, or Stoinis, they have to pick someone like Travis Head, who we have seen bowl, you know, 5-6 overs in a one-dayer, and he can certainly bowl 3 or 4 overs a session if needed. One, to give the other bowlers a rest. Two, to potentially, you know, take a wicket. You know, that reverse psychology does work at all levels. When you see a guy who go, oh my God, this guy is so shit, then the next thought is, you know, I could either score 20 runs and over off this guy, or, man, I would hate to get out to this guy. Mm-hmm. so that works at every level.
Yeah, well, that's how I've got every single wicket I've ever gotten.
Yeah, most of the time, me too as well. They usually go, okay, I can get 20 runs off this guy.
Yeah.
I'll hit 2 sixes, 2 fours, and I'll get him out. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Who comes
don't
out
worry.
On top, yeah. Yeah, so I'm thinking actually Travis Head might do a job for us at 6 or 7. I'll put him at 6 and then bring Peter Neville back in, because I think Wadey's done.
Yeah, look, Wade, obviously haven't been overly impressed with Wadey. If you look what he got, first innings at the Gabba, 7 in a 400-plus score. Didn't have much of a chance, only faced 4 balls, not out for 1 in the second dig. I have been pretty anti-Wade in sentiment and in writing over quite a while. I think Peter Neville was probably the harshest of all the guys that copped the axe after the Hobart debacle. But before we move past that, you've gone through a couple of all-rounders there, but the guy that they've added to the squad for the Boxing Day test is Hilton Cartwright.
Yeah.
Do you think he gets the nod?
I think he gets the nod if Stark and Hazlewood aren't 100% on Christmas Day. Because usually they have like a training session in the afternoon, mm-hmm. Christmas Day on the MCG. They train for about 90 minutes and then all the kids and wives and girlfriends and whatever else, they have a bit of a afternoon Christmas dinner kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think if they're not 100% at that session, I think Cartwright comes in for Maddison. But if they are, you know, back and, you know, refreshed enough, I think Maddison's execution is stayed for another 2 weeks.
Well, it's interesting to me. I mean, Trevor Hones came out and said at the edition that it was basically a precaution and a monitoring of the workload for those guys. But you look at someone like Cartwright now, he's only played 16 first-class matches, averages a tick under 45, has notched up only a couple of hundreds, but, you know, pretty solid with the bat. But bowling average in excess of 40.
Yeah, and yesterday on Foxtel's cricket show, Inside Cricket, Mark Waugh, who's the, you know, the resident pundit on there, who's also on the selection panel for the test side, said he considers Cartwright to be a batting all-rounder, which is fair enough given the stats. But does a batting all-rounder actually, will he be trusted enough to bowl 20 overs in innings?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the idea, you can look at it in two ways. The idea is great to relieve some workload, but if it's 20 overs and it's ineffective bowling that's not keeping things tight or at least having the threat of a wicket, then it's 20 overs where the pressure comes off Pakistan, and that's going to put more pressure on guys like Hazelwood and Stark when they do come back into the attack.
Yep. See, that's one thing I think that Steve Smith sees with Nathan Lyon as well, because there was a lot of talk during the Test match as well as just immediately afterwards, of whether or not Steve Smith, underbowled him or just doesn't trust him, or was Nathan Lyon kind of in and out of form. What are your thoughts on that?
I almost think not that he doesn't trust him, I think he almost doesn't know when is best to use him. It almost feels like he's the stopgap. He gets that over or two before lunch on day one or two to change up before the break. He gets an over or two before the new ball, and then he'll get dumped into a big spell when there's been a period of inactivity and we can't get a wicket, and he'll bowl. Mm. He'll rattle off 10, 15 overs where everything else hasn't worked, so okay, let's go to the offie. It almost feels like, maybe it is a lack of trust, but it almost feels like he's not confident and not 100% aware on when and how to use Nathan Lyon at times. And it almost seems like, okay, well, I've tried Stark, I've tried Hazelwood, I've tried Bird. They haven't got me what I want. I'm going to have to throw the ball to Nathan Lyon, and the conditions might not be optimal for that. And when you're breaking down things, most people aren't going to look at that. They're just going to see, okay, none for what, none for this, none for that, whatever the case may be, and say, well, gee, Nathan Lyon's out of form. But I certainly don't think he gets any favours from his captain.
So he's almost, back, in the early parts of Michael Clarke's career when everyone used to call him Golden Arm.
Mm-hmm.
He'd just come on for one or two overs, try and get us a wicket. I think Steve Smith, because he doesn't, have an actual plan on how and when to use him, he's kind of fallen into that mentality, which kind of pervades Australian cricket all through, of not really knowing when to use the spinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how to use the spinner. And I think that problem could be solved at that level by one proper kind of tactical chat between the two of them of saying, how do you want to get wickets? Where do you want the fielders? Mm-hmm. And how do you, plan on getting these guys out? Are you looking for the caught behind the stumps? Are you looking for LBWs? Going to try and get these guys chipping to short cover or short mid-wicket or whatever. And just putting those plans in place. Because, watching Nathan Lyon bowl, there's not many visible plans on how exactly he's trying to get wickets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think a lot of that, sorry to cut off, I think a lot of that, we went through the period immediately after Shane Warne retired where we were desperate for the next Shane Warne. I mean, Steve Smith himself had that label for a period of time.
Yeah.
And we were sort of chopping and changing and throwing everything at Stuart McGill, Brad Hogg, take your pick, Michael Beer, Jason Crazier.
We had 11 spinners in 6 seasons.
Exactly. We had spinner after spinner. And I almost think as a cricketing nation, we've almost got through that and gone, right, we cannot afford to be dependent on a spinner. We cannot trust a spinner because we don't have a Shane Warne. We need to get back to Australian cricket with these fast bowlers who steam in and take wickets. And I almost think that you see that at almost every level. Even down at park cricket, you've got the spinner is your last resort time and time again. And it's obviously very different, particularly on the subcontinent, where the conditions will certainly favour your spinners more often. You look at some of the Sri Lankan and Indian sides over the years and you think they probably would have been better off playing 3 or 4 spinners and just having the one
spinner.
Sometimes
they did, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had plenty of periods there where even India had Kumble and Harbhajan Singh in tandem and they'd bowl for a spell of 30, 40 overs. And it was good bowling. And the conditions obviously suited that in a big way as well. But I think that's where we're at as a cricketing nation almost. And, you know, we all have our own individual opinions.
Yeah, we're at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I just don't think there's... Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's that ingrained trust in spinners at the moment. We've been hurt too many times. And it's a case of, well, we've got to have one because we need that guy there to churn through a bunch of overs week to week. But it's almost begrudging. And I think it's telling in how often we see the prospect of not playing with a spinner. We saw it ahead of the Gabba test where thought might be that Sayers would come in and Lyon
would be
the one that's out.
Even the Adelaide test, that was weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talked before the Adelaide test of playing four quicks, and I was like, what the hell, this is Adelaide.
It's a parallel universe sort of stuff. I mean, it would honestly not surprise me if someone somewhere suggested it before the Sydney test as well. Someone will do it, you know, someone will. Yeah. So they'll throw it up and go, oh yeah, no, we've got to dump Lyon. But I also think it's epitomises Australian cricket in as performances and question marks have sort of, performances have downturned and question marks have started to appear over the guy. He seems more popular now as a cult figure than ever before.
Well, I think his alter ego, Gary, is. But,
Nice Gary. That's Gary. Everywhere.
Yeah, that's jumped the shark, hopefully.
Yeah, well, as a genuine cricketing enthusiast, it's like, okay, yep, you know, we had 20 years of Nice Shane and all that. We've heard it all before. It's all good, but for the casual fan, it's almost this. It's bigger than the game at the moment. This Nice Gary stuff.
Yeah, and I think I have a feeling, like you know, going back to the originator of Nice Gary, Matty Wade. You know that he's colorblind, yeah.
Yeah, I only found this out recently. I knew that that Chris Rogers was colorblind, but it was only a month or so ago that someone mentioned on Facebook that he was colorblind, and I honestly had no idea.
Yeah, so I wonder how much of an effect that's had in both keeping as well as batting against the pink ball.
Well, it has to have some effect, and I don't say you can use it as an excuse because you've gotten to this level. Yeah. You can't say.
And you should know by now if you can't handle the pink ball, and you don't tell the selectors. I think that's all on you then.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But that did come as a surprise. I knew Chris Rogers was colorblind, and he spoke. He I remember him speaking quite at length about the problems that he had at the Gabba with the seats.
Yeah.
He had a lot of issues with that, and I wonder whether that might have played a bit of a role in Wade's poor form.
Form in these last two games. So I think he might get, two games grace, Melbourne, Sydney, and then if he doesn't perform in potentially four innings, I think he's done because he's keeping, that one stumping chance right at the end of day three, could have changed the game for us.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it would have. I'm not saying it, it would have been definitive, but certainly had the potential to change things for Australia. And if he doesn't strike with the bat, we can't have six and seven out of form.
Well, I mean, We assume, I don't think we've been told definitively, but we assume his inclusion in the side was as a better batsman than Peter Neville. I don't think anyone's ever suggested he's a better gloveman than Peter Neville. I think someone somewhere will have. That's just the nature of the world, I suppose. Mm. But realistically, I think most people are quite set that the fact that Peter Neville is certainly a better keeper.
Yeah.
Have you gone on record, I would have stuck with Peter Neville. But I think, if he's failing at the one thing that he's in the side for, that he supposedly had as an edge, as well as his keeping potentially causing some serious issues. And as you said, it might not have proved definitive at the Gabba, but it could certainly prove costly moving forward. It could be a drop catch late with a side nine down with three to win or something. In a fifth test of the Ashes or something, worst case scenario. It could certainly prove costly, and if you can't keep and your batting is not up to scratch either, then as you said, I think you'll see out the series, but moving forward, unless he puts some big numbers together in Melbourne and Sydney, I think we probably go down the same path and seen the last of Wadey.
Yeah, and I think his keeping to spin's not good enough to warrant taking him to India.
No, that's the big concern. That's a huge concern.
And the thing is that with Peter Neville's batting, I think it was more a question of, you know, when the going's good, he bats well, but he doesn't seem to have that kind of counterpunch resistance kind of fight to his batting.
Yeah,
like,
you're right there.
You know, if he's like, if he comes in at, you know, 4 for 300 or something, he'll get you swimmingly, you know, going through the motions of, you know, scoring 45, 50, 60, potentially 100. Mm-hmm. But if he comes in at 4 for 50, he's not going to be there, you know, and turn the ship around. And I think, you know, if he can do that, I don't know how you actually prove that you can do that at that level without actually being given the chance to do it at that level. Because I don't think he doesn't bat at 6 or 7 for New South Wales, does he?
No, he bats higher up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've repeatedly said that Peter Neville would be my go-to guy. I did a little article on realsport101.com earlier in the week in relation to sort of the other options, and there really isn't a standout keeper coming up as well. There's a few young guys around, but no one has sort of staked the claim to be the next man in running. And
my Bancroft.
he was doing that, and then he ran into a gigantic patch of poor form. But
mental block.
Yeah, goodness me. Look, let's move on. Nick Maddison, 0-1-4 in 3 knocks, has been backed by Ed Cowan and a few others who've come out and said his swashbuckling 4 at the Gabba was a selfless effort and for the good of the team, but 0-1-4, not a lot to hang his hat on.
No, not at all. Who was I listening to today, podcast? The Final Word, ABC's lads. They were saying, you know, last year when there was a similar situation, Adam Voges, Mitchell Marsh, and Voges was like, mate, your, you know, career, you know, the media and the selectors and everyone is talking about you not making enough runs. How about you just get the singles and I'll go for it? Marsh was like, okay, sure, you know, we need quick runs, but yeah, fair enough, let me take a little while to get my eye in and then I'll, you know, go for it. Maddison, whether he, you know, doesn't have the seniority to say that, you know, when he came out to bat with Hanscom, or if Hanscom offered that or didn't offer that, we don't know. We're not going to know for a little while. But it was, you know, it was almost like, you know, the greater fool. You know, you need sometimes you do need guys to take that risk. But I think he could have been a little bit more selfish and, you know, taken a couple of balls to rotate the strike. Because obviously everyone knows he's got that talent to thump sixes into the next suburb. But, you know, trying to do that 2 balls in a row hardly ever works. You know? Even today, Aaron Finch pretty much got suckered out by Fawad Ahmed. 2 nice, full, loopy balls, middle and off, bit of flight. Finchie's kind of run down the pitch, hit them both for 6. Third ball, same line, same length, a little bit flatter. He's outside edge just straight to deep point. and you could see the plan. You could see the plan from the bowling and the field placement. And Finch's just hook, line and sinker just got caught on it. But, you know, it does happen sometimes. And, you know, I think Maddison, for that level, you know, he'll have to grow up and grow up pretty quickly in the next 2-3 weeks to show that he belongs at that level. Because I think Travis said, you know, he's chasing down his spot.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's the idea that selectors are looking at a fifth bowling option by bringing in an all-rounder, the idea that someone like a Travis Head or a Cam Bancroft may be on the horizon. There are other options, and sometimes you can get a stay of execution simply by the fact that there are no other options or there's no real viable alternatives. But right now it looks like there are, particularly if the selectors decide that based on the workload they do want to get that fifth bowling option. It really doesn't matter which way they want to go. It looks like he's the guy that would face the chop, and he's sort of pretty precarious there. Now, I personally would be happy to see some perseverance throughout this series. I spoke when he first selected. I said, look, I don't think he had done enough to warrant the call. I think he's still a promising young player, but he's there now, and I'd rather see them stick with him and give him the chance to develop rather than sort of... I think if they were to cut him adrift now, it can go two ways. He can go back to first-class cricket, reassess and fight and get back, or it could be a complete capitulation. It could be, you know, okay, well, I had my chance at the top. I've stuffed it up. I'm gone. I'll never make it back to that level. And he could very easily waste away and just become a stalwart of yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I would... Personally, I'd like to see perseverance through to the end of the series, give the guy an opportunity to fight his way out of bad form. Sometimes you just need that really tough, gritty knock and facing a bunch of balls, and that can that can turn things around.
A chance to succeed, not a chance to fail. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So that's where I rest. I'd like to see him retain, but he's the obvious candidate if they do look to bring in an all-rounder, so...
And you never know. Third test, he might do a Karun Nair and score a triple century.
That would be fantastic. Look, you mentioned Karun Nair. Let's have a talk. Let's talk India England. We've broken apart as much as we can, I think, the Australian side at the moment. We'll get on to some BBL shortly, but England humiliated to score 400 plus and lose by an innings. It's almost unprecedented.
It's happened twice before, and one of the times was the first test of this series, where they scored 410, I think, and lost by an innings. Wait, I don't know if, did they lose by, I can't remember if they lost by an innings or if they just lost, but I do remember seeing that stat on Fox Sports that it's only happened twice before that a side scored over 400 and lost by an innings. But yeah, this last test was absolutely amazing. Karun Nair, 300 in his fifth innings. Lokesh Rahul, 199. So Nair was 302 not out. Moeen Ali was pretty much the only big contribution for England. First innings with 145. England do have a very, very weak tail. They lost 5 for 15 in 16.1 overs in the second innings to collapse after being none for 97 at lunch. And Alistair Cook seems to have mentally checked out of the captaincy.
Yeah, well, I read he was speaking to the media not so long ago, and he had a daughter born while he was away at the tour of Bangladesh, and he flew home, but was only able to spend 18 hours with his newborn before having to get back on a plane. And now I know it's hard to feel sorry for international cricket stars. Time away from your family is what you sign up for when you become a Test cricketer. We all understand that, and heaven knows I certainly would have loved to have been, had the opportunity to make that sacrifice. But the way you look at it, it is hard to feel sorry for him, but by the same token, you know, he's the wrong side of 30 now. He's been a tremendous leader for England. He's scored a lot of runs.
11,000.
Yeah, well, that's gone past 11,000, which is just mind-boggling performance, to be honest with you. And you couldn't blame him now, particularly with someone like Joe Root ready to sort of step in and take the role.
Yep.
You really couldn't blame the guy for walking away.
Yeah, I think he might... take the next, like, I think they don't play a test match until...
7 months, yeah. Just like
July. When they have South Africa and West Indies at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got the Ashes next summer here. I have a feeling Cook might take that 7 months, announce he's stepping down from the captaincy, but he would like to continue to bat.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Because I think, from a pure selfish thing, I think he's still good enough to, break a lot of England run scoring records and potentially international run scoring records.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ECB will not particularly want to have both Keaton Jennings and
Haseeb
Hamid. Haseeb Hamid. I couldn't remember which was his first name.
Hamid Haseeb. Yeah, I've made the same mistake a couple of times.
I don't think the ECB want to have the two of them opening the batting. Even if it is, just the West Indies or South Africa at home, that's too much of a risk. And I think they'll prefer to have Cook there at the top of the order, and then allow Root to drop down to four by having Jennings at three.
Yeah, Cook strikes me as the sort of guy that wouldn't have an ego about that as well.
Mm.
You look at some, and some guys would rather just walk away from the game than give up the captaincy and have to play under someone. But Cook doesn't strike me as that sort of cricketer.
Mm.
I think he'd be happy to do it. The issue for me will be around timing, because I think England will, as you said, as much as you're looking forward to those home tests against the Windies and South Africa, there's always one eye on the next Ashes series, and they'll want Root to have an opportunity to bet himself in as captain.
Mm.
And if Cook is going to step down, they'll want Haseeb Hamid and Keaton to have that opportunity of 3 or 4 or 5, 6 tests, whatever it is, I think it's 6 or 7 tests or something.
Yeah, 7 tests before the Ashes, yeah.
They'll want to give them every opportunity to bat together and open an innings together before an Ashes series.
Yeah.
Particularly an Ashes series in Australia.
Yeah, especially if Cook's not going to be there. I think Cook's got a lot of soul searching to do, because I don't think he'll get pushed. Yeah, because especially after the whole Kevin Peterson debacle and the coaching changes and all of that, I think between Andrew Strauss and Alistair Cook, they pretty much run English cricket.
You're right.
Almost like the Arsene Wenger situation at Arsenal.
Yeah,
he has to fire himself if anyone's going to do it. Interesting times ahead. Obviously we're having that one eye on England. Given the I don't know if it's right to say upcoming Ashes, but next summer's Ashes, especially with the James Anderson situation.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to be an interesting. I think he's past it.
Yeah.
I'm the first to admit that as a bowler, I've often found him to be a terrific bowler. As a person, I think he's a bit of a douchebag, to be honest with you. I think he's a bit of an arrogant so and so. So not a lot of love lost for someone like Jimmy Anderson, and I think he's past it. I think they've got better options. I think there's players there that can step into the breach, and I think. If he doesn't want to walk, I think they're in a position where they almost have to chop him. I know they'll owe him a lot of gratitude for what he has done over the years, particularly tearing apart Australia on a couple of occasions. But I think you've almost got to swing the axe, to be honest with you.
I think he might get one farewell test, maybe at Lord's or maybe at Old Trafford. I think he's pretty much done. He won't play white ball cricket, I don't think, either.
No.
And they've got options. They've, Mark Wood, Stephen Finn, Wokes, Stokes, Broad. And I think, the one thing, we started off talking about the India versus England series, and, Australia play India at the end of our summer, so...
Can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be one hell of a tour.
Yeah, no, we Australia need to be in at their absolute strongest to compete with India in a test series in India, and I certainly don't think we're going over there full of confidence, that's for sure.
Yeah, talk of Sean Marsh, you know, making his way back into the test side simply because he scores runs on the subcontinent. I don't know if that's wise or not.
There had to be somewhere he scored runs.
Yeah. I think he's one of those guys that, you know, along with Adam Voges, who are like, you know, the Australian cricketing public are like, you know, what has this guy done to, you know, deserve his spot in the side, mm-hmm. and to continue to hold his spot in the side? And the two of them are the guys who score heavily away from home against not so great opposition. So yeah, it's not the, you know, the big marquee tours to England and India and South Africa, but you know, the Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, you know, everyone seemed to struggle against Pakistan, and then, you know, West Indies, and I think, you know, the discerning cricket fan will go, well, mate, anyone at our Sheffield Shield level could probably score runs against those guys, but you still have to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, those runs count certainly in their favour. But, you know, there was talk as well today on the ABC about, you know, whether or not Khawaja and Renshaw both go to India. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't see any reason not to. I mean, Renshaw, They put a vote of confidence in a kid who's 20 years old. Mm. He's now played two tests. He's looked okay. Good 70-odd in the first dig at the Gabba, I should say. I think you've got to show long-term faith. And I don't think you can get stuck in a position where you try and chop and change your openers for tests. I think you've got to have an opening partnership. And obviously Dave Warner is going to fill one of those roles for the foreseeable future. And I think the vote of confidence is in Renshaw to play alongside him for the foreseeable future. So I've got absolutely no need to remove Matt Renshaw from the side. So I'd love to see him go to India and continue to build that partnership. And I think Khawaja's proven himself to be an important member of the top four or five at the moment.
Yep. I think the main crux of their argument was Ashwin loves bowling to left-hand batsmen.
Yeah, and you do have to look at that.
And he does seem to get them out, you know, with frightening frequency.
You do have to look at that.
And do we want to open our innings with three lefties?
You do have to look at that, but by the same token, if you had Matthew Hayden and Justin Langer opening the batting, two left-handers, that the conversation doesn't even get started. And I know they're two world-class openers who had phenomenal test careers, but I think you can start to try and pick people apart before they've even had a chance to cement themselves. And I just think it's silly. They're obviously talented young cricketers, and regardless of whether they're left-handers or right-handers, you're going to have to go and play the best anyway. Mm. And I think you've got to put your best side on the park. And I think at the moment, Australia's best test side has both Renshaw and Khawaja in it.
Yeah, they're the best we've got. And we've got to see if they're good enough.
That's it. You don't improve someone by sheltering them from the conditions either. And if you say to Matt Renshaw, look, we believe in you, but we're not going to take you to India because we think Ravi Ashwin will rip you apart. Well,
there's we mixed messages. We don't believe in there. You. Yeah.
So we don't. So what we're saying is we don't believe in you. Yeah. I don't
what
think
do you think
do
of our spinning options?
Well, I think Lyon has to go. I think he has to go to India. I think they'll probably take Steve O'Keefe as well. He seems to be that guy that's on the cusp. I think there's a bit of faith in him from the selectors that he can keep things tight and pose a bit of a threat with the ball in terms of taking wickets. I like Ashton Agar. I really think Ashton Agar is a decent young player. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders, and I think he can make it at the next level, but I don't know whether the faith is there for him at the moment.
Mm. just listening to the commentators on Fox in their broadcast from that last test, and I think it was Michael Vaughan as well as the Indian guys, Mandrekar and a few of the other blokes, they were saying the problem, you know, with England's spinners, and they took quite a few of them over there, none of them were particularly effective, is that when they bowl flat, it's not fast enough and they don't get enough revs on it, so they get hit. And then when they loop it up, it's not threatening enough to actually, you know, pose a threat. And just watching the BBL and seeing some of these guys bowl against, you know, very aggressive batting, I actually have a feeling, you know, someone like Fawad Ahmed, who, you know, can go on the attack at 85 Ks and potentially bowl even quicker and really rip it through the air, might actually do well in India, as well as someone like Chris Green, who bowls, you know, unconventional angles, might not be good enough yet at that level, but if we take him on the tour just to see, maybe in a tour match, you know, what he does to second-class batting, might be interesting.
He'd be a long way behind all the guys we've mentioned so far for mine. Chris Green, I've seen of a course, bit of the Thunder. I don't mind the idea of Ahmed.
Just in regards to, like, I've never seen him bowl more than four overs, right? Because I only ever see him in the BBL.
Yep.
But just purely in regards to the speed and the revs and the angles from which he bowls and the height, I think, you know, he might actually do all right.
Yeah, look, I think there's potential there. I don't mind the idea of Fawad Ahmed travelling either. I actually think Nathan Lyon can work in those conditions as well. I know a lot of the criticism in Australia is that he can get a little too flat and quick.
Yeah.
And I think that might play, as you said, that might play a little bit more in those conditions and give him a little bit more to work with. So I certainly wouldn't rule him out.
He's our number one spinner. Yeah,
yeah. At the end of the day, that's true. Oh, yeah, you have to take a second spinner. And the reason I went more straight to O'Keefe was I think he's sort of seen by the selection guys and by the establishment as the go-to number two at the moment. And I think that they'll probably look at him. But as I said, for mine, it would be Agar. I think he provides enough, and I think he provides a different option as well. And he certainly doesn't let you down with his batting lower in the order as well, which might be precious runs the way things are going, or things may go in India. But look, there's a big discussion to be had there. And the more I think about it, the more I think I might look at writing an article on it tomorrow. just to explore some options. I think you might just keep an eye out for that. Realsport101.com/cricket. It's /other/cricket. We're still on the other tab behind us, and rugby are in the other tab. So that's still a concern. We're behind MMA, Formula One, WWE, and esports. We're still behind computer games in terms of popularity on the website. So that's a concern. But esports is huge on this website. It's we have a huge market, particularly in Asia. They're all over the esports.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. Yeah. Do what you got to do, guys. But
when you're packing 3 billion people into that smaller space, I think there's more space in the online world to play sports than physical land.
So what you're saying is it's probably easier to pull out the old Don Bradman cricket than go out and have a game in the street.
No doubt.
Look,
no doubt.
Good Lord. That still irks me, though. Come on. I get that it's popular, but put cricket ahead of esports. Yeah. I'm gonna hit the editor-in-chief up again about that. but just one more plug. That's realsport101.com.
Ever since your first plug, I've been trying to think of a nice plug Straubs kind of thing, but in the nice Gary kind of tone.
Nice.
Where I'm like, mate, we don't want to put that in the podcast.
I promise you, I'll use that audio at a later date if you throw out a nice Straubs. I'll drop that out left, right, and center. I'll say something and then I'll just play it, and people won't know whether it's you or whether it's the recording. I'll just like, oh God, Vish is agreeing with everything I say today.
Yeah, nice
Straubs.
But one thing I wanted to mention that caught my ear from Michael Vaughan was the need to score really, really big tons in India. Mm. If you get in about more than half an hour, you almost have to go on and score a big 150 plus.
Yes.
And I think that is something that we almost have to sacrifice some of our one-dayers and, you know, get a few specialists from the domestic scene for our one-day international, you know, circuit. Mm-hmm. And actually get people like Khawaja and Renshaw a lot of practice, you know, batting for a day and a half. Uh-huh. And scoring those massive tons.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 400's not enough.
No, and it's not. And the problem is, I know Steve Smith's just blown past it, but someone like David Warner, once it gets to 100, right, okay, now I can have some fun. I've done the hard work and I got to 100. And then he's out for 110 or he's out for 120, which is a great score. Well done. But as you said, the way these tests are likely to go in the subcontinent, you're going to have someone score a double century to be in a competitive position.
Yeah, you almost
position.
Need a double century per game.
Yeah.
You know, one of your top six have to do it. And, you know, like just if you look at the Indian batting over the five tests, they pretty much had each one of their top six either score, you know, 180 plus, or a big double hundred, at least one in, you know, nine innings.
That's it. You really need that. You need that,
like,
or you
ridiculously
need,
scary.
Yeah, you need that, or you need multiple centurions in every single innings.
Yeah.
And realistically, if someone scores a double hundred, you probably need someone to go with them for half that distance anyway. And you need, you know, 150, 200 run partnerships to put yourself in a competitive position. Absolutely, that's going to be the only way that we'll be genuinely competitive across the test series in India.
Yeah, because seeing some of these guys bat, they just go, you know, dot, dot, four, four, and they just, you know, if it's bad ball or if it's there to hit, they do not miss out on run scoring opportunities. Mm-hmm. They don't look to push too many ones, twos, and threes.
Yep.
It's, you know, the singles when needed, but if it's a bad ball, it's going to the boundary. And, you know, what's his name? Karun Nair scored his last century in, I think, 62, 63 balls. and if that was a first century, that would be, you know, number four, I think, in the fastest tons.
It wouldn't be, it would be right up there for sure. Yeah.
What was McCullum, then who was it from West Indies?
There was a, I've had a complete mind blank now.
Viv Richards.
Yeah.
Viv Richards, Gilly, and then
Gilly at the Wacker.
Yeah. Bloody Poms bowled a wide, so he couldn't hit it for six. Still irks me. Like, on Gilly's birthday, Cricket Australia put that video up there, the highlights. Right? And the last 2 seconds is he misses out by, like, one ball or two balls. Yeah. And every time I saw that day, I watched it, like, three or four times. time I saw the end of that, it just irked me that...
Come on, man.
Flintoff bowled a wide on purpose because he realised he was on the way to... breaking that record.
On track for the record, yeah. Well, the actual record, Brendan McCullum was off 54 balls.
Yeah, so McCullum's got it now. But yeah,
let's say 56 for Viv Richards, 56 for Misbah-ul-Haq against Australia at Abu Dhabi in 2014-15. Gilly back on 57 for the 06-07 Ashes there at the Wacker. David Warner, 69, not too far away. Chris Gayle, 70. A lot of these have been scored against Australia.
Yeah.
McCullum's against Australia. Misbah-ul-Haq against Australia. Chanderpaul, 69 balls against Australia. Chris Gayle, 70 balls against Australia. Fredericks, 71 balls against Australia.
Yeah, when our bowlers are on, we absolutely rip through teams. When our bowlers are off,
they bowl pies.
Batsmen take us to the freaking cleaners. It's really weird. We have no, you know, middle setting.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Mind you, looking at it here, despite doing it in 57 balls of being the fourth fastest century of all time, Gilly doesn't even crack the top 10 for fastest century by minutes, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, well, England took as much time as they could to bowl those balls.
I suppose you're right. They and did also, a lot of that whole series.
And he hit like a few of them like into the river, right?
Yeah, that's true. I suppose when you think like, about it like that, I'm just thinking of all the sixes.
When you have to actually go diving for the ball in the freaking river, it's going to take some time.
I never thought of it like that. Mind you, big shout out. Richie Beno scored a century against the West Indies in 78 minutes at Kingston in 54-55.
Man, the great man. Could do everything.
That's a good knock. Still the finest cricket commentator I've ever heard. Look, let's finish up with a bit of BBL talk. As a Thunder man, I'm not keen to dive too quickly into it, given that...
68 runs off 17 balls required.
Yeah, with 3 wickets in hand. So, you know, it's not over till it's over. But
against a team that has no mainline bowlers.
And I think, better said, just lost another wicket as well. So, Chris
Green. Oh, Cummins going big.
But see, Pat Cummins and Ryan Gibson have been the shining lights so far, but lost the first game of the BBL, 8 for 159, the sixes just the one down for 160 in reply. Moses Enriquez did the damage. The Brisbane Heat won the second game by 10 runs. They defeated the Adelaide Strikers.
They did exactly as I foretold.
Did they?
In the last episode, remember I said they're going to just go hard with the bat if they win the toss and bat.
Yep.
Obviously, they lost the toss and got sent in. Same outcome. Mm-hmm. So, batted first, scored big, and then just did their best to defend it. So.
Pretty much. They got off to a decent start. Pearson, 46. McCullum, 42. Linney, 29. Ross, against the Strikers. Former team, Alex Ross against the Strikers. 64 from just 36 balls. So, they set things up quite nicely. The Strikers had a good knock from our man, Benny Dunk.
Yep.
85. But... other than a 52 from Jay Weatherald, it was pretty tame stuff. They got within 10 runs, but a big win for the Heat. But as we said, the Thunder limping to a second loss to the Melbourne Renegades this time. No real fight apart from Benny Rohr, Paddy Cummins, and Ryan Gibson, who there's a fantastic article on realsport101.com/other/cricket.
Nice plug, Straubs.
Nice plug. I like it. I'm going to roll with that. We spoke about it earlier. Obviously, love having the BBL on telly. Who's caught your eye over the first few fixtures? Who's been the standout guy?
I watched yesterday's game, and I'm watching today's game. I actually like the look of Pat Cummins with the bat. Mm. You know, we didn't really get a chance to mention it, but Jackson Bird in the Test side. You know, proved Rod Marsh wrong, and he
which is easy to do apparently.
Yep. And it's good to see that Cummins cannot actually, you know, potentially bat at like 8 or 9.
He's a clean. He's a clean hitter of the ball.
Very clean hitter. If he gets back into the Test side, potentially ahead of, you know, Jackson Bird. if we need, you know, another 150k quick bowler.
You can never have too many.
You can never. Well, actually, I think, you know, the faster it comes onto the bat, the faster it can potentially be dispatched to the boundary.
It's funny you say that. The thing I like the most about the BBL, and I've only seen the first game so far.
Segway win, mate. Segway win.
How good's that? Well, the Segway was good until you stopped me to point out how good the Segway was. And then that kind of terminates the effectiveness of the Segway. But what I liked, they had the radar there for not just the speed of the delivery, but the speed of the ball as it was dispatched by the willow. I like that.
Finchie hit a ball for six off I think Cummins actually over mid wicket. Slower ball came to him at, I don't know, it was off a spinner. Came to him at 75. Went off the bat at 147.
Christ Almighty. That's a hit. And people wonder why no one wants to go in at, like, back pad and stuff.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Like, it's not something you ever really think about is how quickly a ball actually comes off a cricket bat. But, yeah. I mean, I think the one I saw was one Pat Cummins hit, and it got to him at 130 or something and was dispatched at 142 or something like that. And I'm like, you don't realise how quick the ball is. It's already got some severe momentum. Mm. And then for it to be so forcibly... dispatched. Moved along by the forcibly dispatched by the bat. It's kind of mind-boggling when you think of it like that. But tomorrow, 23rd of December, we've got the Sixers against the Hurricanes and the Scorchers against the Strikers. So that'll be a late start because it's 6:15 local time in Perth.
Yeah, so we'll have Friday night double header.
Yeah, that's going to be fantastic.
The East Coast, yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. Then we've got a little Chrissy break, of course, Christmas, Boxing Day. We're back for, I suppose it's technically a doubleheader. We've got the Boxing Day test, and then we have the Hurricanes hosting the Stars. And as we said, pretty much cricket every day for the next few weeks, which is just fantastic.
Absolutely loving it.
It's hard to underestimate, even just, you pop down, open a cold can when you get home and you've still got the sun out. And just throw a bit of cricket on and just enjoy it. It's hard to overestimate how good it is.
Horrible run out.
As I said before we started recording, I think we've had a very early glimpse into how the Thunder season's going to go. But I think that's probably just about going to do us. We've just racked up over the hour mark, so we might wrap things up there. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
No, it should be interesting to see if Cartwright gets a game on Boxing Day, and if he doesn't, and if Maddison plays, will be interesting to see how many runs Maddison and Wade score between them.
Yeah, well, they're both going to sort of be. It's almost going to be a bit of an audition for those two to maintain the roles. So I'm looking forward to that. Boxing Day is my favourite day of the year. No one disturbs me. Christmas is going to be great. I've got my San Diego Chargers kick off against the Cleveland Browns at 5 a.m. on Christmas morning. So the race.
Is it possible for two teams to lose?
It's torn emotions because I'm thinking every loss gets us higher up the draft, but I don't want to be the only team that loses to the Browns. So you don't want to be that team.
So you're pretty much tanking, other than for one game.
Yeah, well, last year it was hashtag blow up for Bosa. This year I haven't decided who we're tanking for just yet. I like the look of Myles Garrett, but I don't think we can get that far down. But I don't want to be, if the Browns finish 1-15, I don't want to be that team. Because you're the team that finished, that lost to the team that couldn't win. They've been over a year without a win.
Yeah.
The big thing for me on that morning, Christmas Day, I am in my fantasy NFL Super Bowl. So I'm going to be riding everything in a big way because there's a tidy $1,000 on the line for the winner. So I'll be riding that big time. So Christmas will be fun. There'll be a lot of backyard cricket. I sent a message to my dad. I said, look, we've got a lot of kids around for Christmas this year, which we really haven't had for a few years. We're all sort of growing up a little bit. And I said, is the backyard cricket going to tame down a little bit? And he sent me a picture back with... three tennis balls, half covered in masking tape with 50-cent, electrical tape with 50-cent pieces underneath them. And he said, not a chance in the world. Oh, yeah. We've experimented. The 50-cent piece is the worst one. It hurts. So,
Wait, so you put the 50-cent piece...
under the tape on the side of the ball.
yeah,
right over the far side. That's basically for your swing.
Swing, yeah.
That swings like. See, we didn't have those fancy like swing kings when I was a kid.
You have to have extra
tape around the seam to make sure you've got a nice raised seam on the tennis ball. Yeah. So we'll get the kids in early, we'll get them tired, and we'll get them out, and then we'll get the big balls out and do some carnage, because there's going to be a few bruised shins. Don't worry about that.
We used to use the 20-cent piece, and we'll put it under... We'll actually kind of take it away, almost as far away from like the center of the ball as we can. So get quite a few layers of tape going, then put the 20-cent piece in, and then a couple more layers.
So then the weight actually kind of bulges out,
and you actually get a lot of swing.
When we had a period of time in the backyard where we were playing with real cricket balls, despite not wearing pads.
Me and my dad have done that. We broke way too many windows.
Well, that was the problem. We have big bay windows at the back of our house. Yeah. And I, as a big left-hander, I put probably the cleanest cover drive I've ever played in my life straight through the big bay window. And there was some concerns about that, but it was more, okay, accidents happen, don't do it again. The problem was when the next day, about an hour after the glass had been replaced, I probably played the exact carbon copy of that shot and put it through the exact same spot again. Yeah. That brought a pretty swift end to the hard ball. And from there, we sort of had to start experimenting. But what we found was the 50-cent piece left a lot more bruises than anything else.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, playing street cricket in Lithgow was all about toughness. So there was not a lot of skill on show, but a lot of toughness. So, look, it is obviously a Merry Christmas from us. We won't speak again on the podcast till after Christmas. I'm not 100% sure what we're going to do next week, whether there'll be a show or we might have a week off. We'll probably take
a week off.
I think so, yeah. So we'll confirm all that on Facebook. If there's no show, you'll know why. And you should totally be sitting around Christmas time with your family waiting to download our podcast.
Not,
I understand.
Not listening to podcasts.
Yeah. No, just this one. But obviously have a lovely and safe holiday, everyone. Enjoy the cricket. As we said, it's the best time of year for the cricket. And we will talk once again on the other side. So thank you very much.
Thank you.